Your story is waiting for you today. Your story has something new to say. But your story will only come out to play when you're alone. Alone. Alone in a room with invisible people.
This episode of Alone in a Room with Invisible People may contain some swearing. Alone in a Room with Invisible People is brought to you by HollysWritingClasses.com. Hi, my name is Rebecca Gallardo, and I'm the host of Alone in a Room with Invisible People. I am here today with author and teacher Holly Lyle, and our episode is Ruining Reading by Writing. But before we get into the episode, I wanted to let you know this is a mini episode. So all we're going to be doing is covering maybe a question or two or a topic that comes up. This is going to be our kind of extra little episode for you guys when we feel like we need to recover something we didn't finish in another episode or maybe answer your questions. So it's going to be a lot faster paced, and we're not going to be talking about what we're doing currently. We'll save that for our longer episodes. So we're going to get right into the episode today with a question from Mike. I'm going to go ahead and read this question, and Holly is going to go over the answer and a couple of different things that she has basically kind of thought of when she read the question. So the question is, what do you do when you find the inner critic is ruining your enjoyment, not just of writing, but reading too? Since I started getting serious about writing, I found it more difficult to enjoy reading because there's always a voice in my head telling me I could never write such good prose or come up with such an interesting character, etc. Any tips on that? I have found it helps to read out of the genres I write in, less likely to draw comparisons, or to read page-turning thrillers, no time for inner critic to get involved, but I can't do that forever. Okay, Holly, so what were your ideas on this?
This is a very common problem. And it's endemic, not just among new writers, but even among writers who have been doing this for a while. Every skill has a price. If you are a doctor, by the time you have finished medical school and worked in the ER and all of this, you see disease, you see death, and your sunny vision of life is darkened by the realities of things that really can go wrong and how bad they can be. If you are a musician and you become really good at what you do, then all of a sudden you can't listen to your favorite grunge metal garage bands anymore because you can hear the hacks. You can hear everything that they miss and the three chord progression that is always the same three chord progression. You hear it and you kind of groan. And if you are writing, you see the language that fails or the writing that's better than yours. You can see not just, you're not just there for the story anymore. All of a sudden you see how it's put together. You see how the sausage is made. So step one in fixing this is you read broadly, not narrowly. You read fiction, you read nonfiction, you read stuff that's better than yours, you read stuff that's worse than yours, but you're not just reading to read. That there are some authors that you will discover as you go through that they will so bring you into their worlds that you can let go of being a writer long enough to read them, and you just fall into their prose, and the world goes away. My recommendation for that is Lawrence Block, who, my God, he is just amazing and magnificent, and it seems like every word he writes was put there effortlessly, perfectly, without any struggle, and it just flows, and it's rich and beautiful, and he's funny, and when he's scary, he scares you, and so you will find some writers that even as a writer yourself, you can just step aside and let the book take you with it. But a lot of the time, man, you're a surgeon in the ER. You're looking at this stuff and you see it and you know what it is and you can see why it could be better. You could see why it's worse. Or you can just see, my God, that's really beyond where I am right now. Okay, so then you go to step two. After you're reading broadly, you ask why. Okay, you look at this thing that you admire beyond words and you say, okay, why is this good? What specific thing about it is so amazing to me? Is it the protagonist or the antagonist? Is it the conflict? Is it the twist? Is it the setting? Because it probably isn't everything. It's probably going to be one kind of thing that just blows you away from this one writer, you know. And then you look at the bad stuff the same way. You look at protagonist, antagonist, conflict, setting, twist. What is it about it? Where does it fail? Why does it fail? What specific thing did this author do that makes you cringe or that makes you wince or that makes you think, oh my God, I never want to do that again? Identify it clearly.
Okay, so what you're saying right now is that what Mike is going through is normal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that you can use, and it's something that you should use. And when you said read broadly, that means don't do what he's doing and limit yourself to two things.
Right, you read in your genre.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so then after you have asked why, okay, you read broadly, you ask why, then you go to step three, which is ask how. How can I adapt what works into my genre, into my style, into my plotting? Okay. Let's look at George R. R. Martin, who, in spite of the fact that he leaves a lot of ends unfinished in the massive Song of Ice and Fire, does amazing characters. Just mind-bogglingly good characters. And people love them. You had said some things about this when we were discussing it earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, the characters, the readers relate to them, even the bad ones. There's something that's relatable. You've got people that you either absolutely love and adore, or you love to hate them.
Mm-hmm.
So he does all of this very, very well. And you're drawn into these characters. Even I've known people that don't even like fantasy, and they love his books. I've known people that weren't really readers, and they watched the Game of Thrones series, and they also surprised to find that it wasn't, that was just the title of the first book, and the actual series is A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
And then they pick up the first book and they read it, and it's that suddenly they're readers. So there's something about his characters that are really captivating.
So what we're looking at here then is how. We're looking at George R. R. Martin's magnificent characters, and you don't want to steal them. What you want to do is make them your own. You want to make them your version of what he's doing. So then to do that, you have to understand what he's doing. And what he is doing is he is giving these people depth. They are not just one layer of character. They are not, they have good in them, and they have evil in them, and they have richness of conflict. They have passions. They have things they want. They have things they fear. They are fully fleshed out human beings. And while they might be a little on the dark side for some people, they are nonetheless very well thought out. And not only are they these real people with these real needs and wants and passions and desires and fears, but they are also in a world that is, that they could only exist in that world. They could not, you could not drop Tyrion into today's world and have him work. But you can in the world where he lives in, where there are nobles, there are classes and castes of characters, there are tiny little countries that are all at war with each other, all despise each other. There are dragons, there's magic, there's all of this stuff. And in this deep, rich, well-thought-out, well-developed world, these people fit. And the problems they are dealing with are problems that could only exist in that world. The girl who raises dragons, she would be out of job in our planet. But
but without getting too deep into this, because that is a many, many episode topic.
It is.
The point that you are making here is that there is something to be learned from every book that you read.
Good or bad. You also want to read books that suck. And you get to define whether they suck or not. You know, nobody else gets to tell you this. You get to decide that on your own. You read this, you go, oh my God, this is awful. Then you keep reading. And you are reading not for pleasure. You are reading to understand what doesn't work in this book and why. Because step three is where you're asking yourself, you know, how can I either do this or how can I prevent this from showing up in my book? And this is things like Mary Sue's, sloppy word choices, lazy or predictable plotting, killing off everybody's favorite character after they fall in love with them.
Or even like I've been reading some of the and sometimes it could be just something that doesn't work for you. Maybe a whole lot of people like a certain type of character, and this is something that falls into romance. So if you're writing romance, this is something that you need to look at. If you're reading a whole bunch of books with a certain type of either female, or which is my problem, female protagonist that I don't like, or male protagonist that you don't like, and everything else about the writer's work is really good. She's a good writer. She's, you know, the settings are great. If you don't like the lead protagonists, change it in your own book. I mean, you don't have to write in a certain characters or a certain world, which brings me back to something that you said, Holly, in the conversation we had before we did this episode. You said you wanted to mention being told to read a certain book because it's popular.
Oh, yeah.
And I felt that was a really, really good point.
Yeah, let's get back to that. Let's say someone says, oh my God, you have to read this book. This is the best book written this year. And it sold a zillion copies. So you pick it up, planning to figure out how to do this. Because, you know, obviously we would all love to sell a zillion copies.
Oh yeah.
And you hate it. You hate it. You hate everything about it. So you're thinking, okay, I should add this stuff to my work, even though I hate it. No, you shouldn't. No.
Yeah, and this goes back to the thing we were talking about when we were talking about debugging a plot. Don't write something that you hate just because it's popular.
No. This is, and this is God, people do this. They go, okay, well, I'm going to jump on this bandwagon because this is popular. No, if you can make yourself go through this horrible, horrible book that everybody loves, you drag yourself through it, you look at what you can find in there that sold that many copies. And if it's angsty, thumb-sucking teenagers complaining about their lives and rolling up in a ball and wailing, and that's who's buying it, well, you're probably not going to be able to sell to that audience. But there are other readers, and there are people who will love what you write.
Plus, you can't always drum up. In fact, you can't really drum up the magic that it took to get a certain book to a New York Times bestseller list. You don't know the steps that it took. For instance, 50 Shades of Grey was a fan fiction written based on the Twilight series. And so she already had this massive amount of news behind it, of controversy, of all this and that. So her stuff, became huge bestsellers. And it did help a certain subgenre of romance get a little bit more popularized. But a lot of people say, well, I want to be the next E.L. James. And it's like, no, you want to be a writer. That's fine. If you're inspired by what she wrote, that's fine. But it's, you can't look at this like, I need to dissect this book and find out why it worked. Because sometimes the reason it worked, you cannot control.
Right. In fact, all the times, the reason that it worked. You can write a great book, but you cannot make yourself the next New York Times bestseller. That you cannot do that. If writers could do that, we would all be New York Times bestsellers.
Yeah.
If writers had the ability, or if even publishers had the ability to know what was going to make this happen, believe me, everything would sell a million copies because that's where they make their profit.
Yeah.
But yeah, publishers don't know. Writers don't know. Editors don't know. Agents don't know. Everybody hopes.
Yeah.
Even with good stories, Harry Potter. And you do the best you can.
Yeah. Even with Harry Potter, and it took off, and you can't control that. So
right.
It's just, if somebody's saying this book is really popular, this book is huge, you should write that. It's like, just no. You can take it, you can dissect it, you can read it, but don't look at it like a roadmap to making yourself a million-dollar seller. So
right.
That was our question, was how. Is there any other steps that you want to...
But it kind of actually feeds in here. Step four is stop comparing yourself to writers who do this for a living.
Oh, okay.
And when, Mike, when you're looking at people who have been writing for 30 years, which I have, or people who have been writing longer than me, we started out sucking. Everybody sucks when they start. Everybody thinks they're amazing, and then they start comparing what they're doing to what other people are doing, and they're going, I mean, if they're honest. Now, there are some folks who think they're absolutely amazing who aren't, who will never see it because they don't care about the words. They just care about the idea that they can make $1 million writing a book and be rich and famous.
Well, and some people don't like criticism either. Some people don't. They think that they're really good. They don't want to take any advice from anybody else, but I don't think anybody listening to this podcast or that take your classes or anything like that is in that area. I think everybody knows that they can always grow, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that's it, is that this is something you can do, that you can go from being a sucky writer to being somebody who makes a living at this. And I know this is true because I did it. And you don't have to go to college to do this. And I know that's true because I did it. I have a tech education. It was turned into a community college about a week before I graduated from nursing school. But I have two years of nursing school and 7 years of grinding in teaching myself how to write. And that's how I became a professional writer.
So anybody looking at anybody else's work, it's something that they can learn from, but to not compare themselves to.
Yeah.
So even like, for instance, for me, I've been writing since I was 11 or something. So like 24 years, but it was on and off. I was also a kid for a lot of those years. And you go through this certain phase where you think you're going to be the first kid writer. And there's a lot of that where it's kind of just like you're getting out all of the bad stuff. So there's a lot of that for everybody. And I can't compare myself to somebody who's been maybe writing and publishing for less time, maybe the last 10 years, because they've been getting it done. And I have been procrastinating, and I had a lot of fear involved with, you know, sending my stuff out. And thanks to you and my husband, you know, I went ahead and I pushed through and I got the first book submitted, the first actual finished revised book submitted. So this is something that I can say I might have been writing longer than such and such. So I can't compare myself to somebody who has been, you know, publishing and in the industry and taking credits or edits and critiques and really working on a deadline and pushing themselves through. And by the way, I'm sorry if you hear any sniffling or sneezing. My husband's dog is a little bit sick and she's with me right now. So we apologize for that. but it really is this thing where you're telling people like you need to go ahead and read other writers and learn from them and pull what you love and push away what you hate or dislike, but you don't want to compare yourself and say, well, they've been doing it for less time, so why am I crappy, why am I still shit, why am I this and that. It's really that's kind of like this downward spiral that you go into.
Right What you do, you find a book you love. And it's better than anything that you think at the moment that you can write. And at the moment, that's probably true. But you look at it, you read it, you thank the author for showing you how to do something. And then you look through it and you understand. You teach yourself from that writer's work what that writer did that you love so much. And you adapt it to your own world, your own style, your own thing. You don't ever copy it. You just learn how to understand what they did that you want to be able to do too. And you make that a part of what you do. That's like me and Lawrence Block. I read everything I could find by him, including some of the early stuff that wasn't really very good. And that was kind of encouraging for me because I read that earlier stuff and I thought, oh, okay, so he didn't start out being God. Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, that's got to feel good to be able to see the progress in a writer that you adore.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I started out reading his Matt Scudder stuff and his, I'm gonna forget the name now, the thief that he writes that's just hilarious, and I cannot remember his name. Oh, that's a shame. But, and then I started reading this earlier stuff and I found out that he wrote porn to make a living before he started reading the stuff that I actually read, which was very early non-porn. And you think, okay, well, this is a guy who grew. He started And he became just magnificent and wonderful. And, you know, so this is something you can do. And this is anybody. This is anybody right now. If you want to do this and you are willing to work to do it, then you can get where you are, where you want to be from where you are. And that's any of us. We all start out sucking. Just remember that. And we get better.
Okay, so basically let's wrap Bernie Rodenbaum.
Bernie Rodenbar, thank you. Yeah, I knew it was three syllables and I could not get there.
So let's wrap this up. Go ahead and give us the pointers again, and then let's take some actionable. Give Mike some actionable item or something that he can go ahead and forward to after the episode.
Okay. So first off, just remember that every skill has a price, and the price of being a writer is that it gets harder to find books you want to read. Step one is read broadly in spite of that. Read everything. Fiction, nonfiction, stuff that's better than yours, stuff that's worse than yours. Step two is ask, why is this good? Why is this bad? And ask specific questions so that you can identify exactly what it is about what you're reading that either matters to you or that you want to avoid. Step three is ask how. How can I adapt this, or how can I avoid this? And step four, stop comparing yourself to writers who do this for a living, because you can and will get there yourself if you're willing to put in the work. And then the final thing on that is go out and start reading the genre. This is specifically for Mike. Go out and start reading the genre that you're writing in and looking at what people are doing that has so blown you away, and start dissecting it to understand specifically what you want to do yourself from those things, and then start figuring out how to do it.
So don't be afraid of that inner critic who is telling you that you're not going to be good enough. If that ever pops up in your head, say, okay, well, what is it about this that I feel I am lacking in? You touched on envy before, and I think that was something that was really important that we need to cover real quick before we end the episode.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. You can eat yourself alive with envy. But it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be envious. What you can do instead is, instead of thinking that you can't do this, which you own your thoughts, and you know that you can do this, and it is just a part of your thought, that a negative thought that you can banish that is telling you that you can't. But the other thing is, when you are looking at something that somebody has written that is so magnificent and you are envious about it to the point of denigrating your own abilities, then you have to let go of that and appreciate what they could do and understand that you can do that too. That envy is just kind of this, you said it, it's this point.
Yeah, because I was looking at that with, that's how I learned with art, how to more appreciate what is out there. It's this artist that I follow, Lisa Clow from Lockery Fine Art on YouTube. She's amazing. In one of her videos, she said that envy is kind of like the signal in your brain that is, and instead of letting it turn to jealousy and this very, very green monster that you, creates that downward spiral in your brain, she said, let it be a signal to you that it's telling you something about the piece that is inspiring instead of, like you said, denigrating. So it's something that you are looking at, and you can tell yourself, okay, I'm not there yet, but this is possible. And no, it might not be the same style. You won't ever be replicating somebody's work, but to see what they have done and to know that it's not an inborn talent, 99% of the time it's all skill, that is something that you can learn to utilize. So again, that it's that left brain that is sending out signals that you just need to know how to react to those signals or respond to those signals instead of react. So you control your response and you look at it and you say, thank you. You know, you express your appreciation for the work that somebody else did. And you tell yourself, okay, either I need to learn how this was done, if that is applicable, or you just tell yourself, this is possible if I keep working at it and I can reach these levels.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important, just as kind of like my final note on this, is that if another human being did this with, you know, a brain and eyes and hands and skills that had to be learned, that were not just given as a gift, that had to be learned and worked at over years and with effort, then you can do something equally magnificent. It won't be the same thing, but it will be your thing. And you can make it as magnificent as you are willing to put the work in to make it.
Absolutely. Not everybody is a freaking Beethoven or Mozart. You know, no. Mozart was the one that was composing Mozart things. Was, yeah. He was three or six. So,
right.
Yeah, some people are born like that, but it is such a small percentage. Everybody else has to work. And that's encouraging, because you can do anything. You just have to work, which has always been your motto.
Well, I think Mozart actually had to work at it, too, in spite of the fact that, you know,
well, yeah, when he got older.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there are some people out there that are born prodigies, and their brains,
right,
while they did have to work, their brains just work differently, and a lot of things came easier to them. And you can't look at people like that and say, man, I wish I was like that, because you're limiting yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right. You can do anything that you are willing to put the effort in to do. You can do this. You just do it. Just let go of all of the frustrations and the thoughts that are holding you down, and start putting in the work to make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you have any questions about this episode or any others, please feel free to drop us a line at alonewithinvisiblepeople.com. If you want to make it a little bit easier for us, leave the question with the episode that you listen to, just so that we can find the reference a little bit easier. If you have a question that you prefer to keep private, you can post to Holly's Patreon page. If you're a patron, you can post to Holly's writing classes. If you are a student, or if you're not, you can become a free student. I think you've got a course up there, and then that will give you immediate access to the open discussion board, and you can post your questions in there. I think we might have a podcast.
Yeah, the free class that gets you in is How to Write Flash Fiction That Doesn't Suck.
Okay, yeah. And then you can also email us at show@alonewithinvisiblepeople.com. That is shortened to make it a little bit easier for you guys to email us. It is show@alonewithinvisiblepeople.com. We also have a Twitter and an Instagram. It's the same. It is AIARWIP. You can also search both of those with Alone in a Room with Invisible People. And we have a Facebook page as well, Alone in a Room with Invisible People. So thank you very much for listening to this episode. We hope you like the shorter format, and we're going to try to do some of these pretty consistently. Again, we're going to have to check our schedules and make sure that we can fit these in. So if you have any questions or anything that requires more than like a paragraph answer, we will probably take it to a mini episode. Do you have anything else to say, Holly?
That's it. Just write and know that you can do this.
We will see you guys on the next episode.